Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, April 19th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain!
Well, you have to pay a little bit of attention, because I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist Dr. Dick. Holy cow, it's another milestone. Today is my 200th podcast. Isn't that fucking amazing? I mean, who would have guessed there would be such staying power? One thing for certain, I could never have accomplished this on my own. I have all the marvelous guests who have joined me over the past 2 years to thank for this longevity. With their help, I have been able to accomplish my goal of bringing you the best in education, enrichment, and entertainment. When I began these podcasts, I promised that we would focus on human sexuality, particularly as it intersects with art, religion, the popular culture, relationships, our health and well-being, and entertainment and politics. I promised that I would respond to your questions, as I do with my traditional Q&A sessions, like today's podcast. I promised that we would chat with interesting and controversial guests, authors, artists, sex workers, pundits, and porn stars. I promised we'd investigate the sexual underground and meet fascinating people on the cutting edge. And so I launched 3 different podcast series over the last 2 years. The Erotic Mind podcast series, the Sex Edge-ucation series, and the Sex Wisdom series.
Two thumbs up. Way up.
I promised that I'd review adult products and talk to those who work in the novelty industry, as well as offer tips on staying healthy and growing your relationships, too. And I've tried to do all of this with a sense of humor. Apparently, it's working because your response has been overwhelming. So thank you, thank you, thank you. It's so good to know that you too believe, as I do, that sex is good and good sex is even better.
Whoa!
So like I said, today is another Q&A session. I hope to also throw in a few other surprises too. So hang on to your hats, sex fans. It's going to be a fun ride. But first, a word from our sponsor. Today's program is brought to you by So Hard for Men. So Hard is what we in the business lovingly call a boner pill. But So Hard for Men is not just any old Viagra knockoff. No siree. It's a pure, all-natural herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused. Listen, I've tried So Hard for Men, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Look for my review of So Hard for Men on my product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. Use the site's search function, type in the keyword herbal, and you can read my comments and evaluation.
Hey, bud, what's your problem?
No problem here. The makers of So Hard for Men are so confident that their product works that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. They also proudly offer all their first-time customers a free, no-obligation trial pack. This is an amazing opportunity to test this product on your own. Get your wood the natural way. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. First, to voicemail.
My name is Sexy. I'm about to be 13. I'm coming from Greensboro, North Carolina. And I've had sexual intercourse at work. I'm gonna get the head will never go in my vagina. So I've tried like hot dogs and toothbrush is not going fine, but whenever I try sex, it doesn't work. Please help. Bye.
I'm sorry, hon. I can't make heads or tails of your message. You didn't speak loud enough, and there seemed to be some interference on the line when you were speaking. So could I ask you to call back and record your message again? It's really important to me. I'm going to be delighted to respond to you, but I have to hear the question first. Okay? Thanks. Our next correspondent is Jerry. He's 60. He writes from Minnesota. I have a fixation with prostate stimulation. I have recently been giving myself perineum injections to the prostate with 2/3 xylocaine and 1/3 sodium chloride. The xylocaine is 2% with ephedrine. I'm careful to clean the injection site just above the anus and use a 1 1/2 inch 25 gauge needle injecting 3 milligrams. The feeling is fantastic when I hit the prostate. I actually feel the nerves take the anesthetic. I'm careful to always make sure I do not hit a blood vessel before injecting and pulling back on the plunger. Is this fetish common? What dangers do you think are there? I find this a real turn-on. I also have done many intrarectal injections to the prostate, but only using sodium chloride, salt water, as I cannot see the syringe to tell if I'm injecting into a blood vessel. This requires careful cleaning of my anus, but have never had any problems, except very rarely giving myself a urethral infection. You've got to be kidding. I mean, really, Jerry, you want to know if this is a common fetish? No, I'd have to say not all that much. So I'm sitting here trying to imagine how you go about doing these injections. What kind of physical position must you have to get into to see and then land the hypodermic needle on just the right spot on your taint so that you can hit your prostate? I suppose you do this with a mirror, right? But even then, there's plenty of room for error. Have you been doing this needle play for a while? I have to wonder, how in the world did you happen upon shooting anesthetics right into your prostate? And where are you getting the anesthetics from, I wonder? Everything about your story makes me suspicious as to the authenticity of your reporting. If indeed you are doing precisely what you tell me, allow me to advise you to reconsider your actions. I don't think this is a healthy pursuit for any number of reasons, and I suspect that you also have your qualms. I mean, why else would you be asking me about potential dangers? If you are experiencing periodic infections, that tells me that you're not taking care of business properly. I'm going to guess that you are not properly attending to sterilizing the medical equipment you're using, and if your anesthetics are coming from a dubious source, then anything can happen. I'm also guessing that you have too much time on your hands, or maybe you should take up golf. Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail hotline you keep talking about? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Write it down. 866-422-5680. Next, we hear from Tom, who's 18 and writes from Indiana. My penis curves quite a bit to the left. It hangs to the left when not erect. And the curve is quite present while erect, but nothing terrible. I went to my doctor and asked him about it, and he said the curvature was normal, as he did not detect any plaques. I'm still a bit worried about it, as I have been looking around the internet and haven't been able to find any pictures of what's normal and what's not. Maybe you could help. Since I'm unable to see photos of your unit, I'm going to side with your doctor. I think you can be pretty certain that your curve is just a normal variation on the look of a handsome and healthy tool. And I don't know where on the internets you've been looking for evidence of what is normal or what is not, but my rule of thumb in situations like this is if it works fine and it doesn't hurt, then you're probably okay. However, for as hearty a plaything as it is, our cock is relatively delicate. When you get wood, your cock engorges with oxygen-rich blood, which is essential for the upkeep of the smooth muscle tissue, the kind of tissue that makes up about 90% of your cock. So you can see how a healthy circulatory system is important to a vibrant sex life. If you were to see a cross-section of your stiffy, you'd see that there are three distinct spongy tubular structures. Each are made up of smooth muscle tissue. Two of these tubular structures, one on either side of your cock, both of which run the length of your dick, are called the corpora cavernosa. These marvelous structures become engorged with blood, lifting and thickening your cock into erection. The corpus spongiosum, the third tubular structure, is located just below the corpora cavernosa. This baby houses your urethra, through which urine and semen pass during urination and ejaculation, respectively. This may also become slightly engorged with blood, but less so than the corpora cavernosa. An oxygen-deprived cock will build up a kind of plaque, as you suggested. This resembles scar tissue. This will cripple a dude's rod. The disease name is Peyronie's disease, or rob him of his wood altogether. However, I don't think this is the case for you. Again, if you have your doubts, send me some snapshots of your unit, both soft and hard, and I'll have a look-see. Good luck. Next, we hear from Megan. She's 29, writes from Toronto. I'm a new mother, and this is my first child. He was born 3 weeks ago, but I'm still enthralled with the miracle of it all. So far, motherhood has been pretty wonderful. Sure, I'm tired, but just holding my son in my arms makes me so happy I sometimes cry with joy. There is a problem, however. My husband wants to resume our sex life, but I have absolutely no interest. I love him dearly, and I know I owe this to him, but I have no libido. What can I do? Yep, this is a common enough complaint, and precisely the place where new parents experience the most strain on their relationship. And when you think about it, it's not all that surprising. Most new mothers are exhausted by the expectations of motherhood, and first babies are the most challenging of all. Added to these burdens, her partner eagerly awaits the resumption of the sort of sex life that was in place before the pregnancy. New mothers often feel like their husband is just one more person to service. One more person with needs and demands that are keeping her from her much-needed rest. New mothers can find sex unappealing for any number of reasons, both physical and emotional. If you're breastfeeding, your breasts are sore, heavy, and leaky. Your body just doesn't feel sexy, with its stretch marks, cellulite, dark nipples, and dark line down the abdomen. Not to mention the weight gain and varicose veins. Then there is the lochia, the discharge after the birth, which lasts 3 to 4 weeks and does not smell very good. If you have an episiotomy, the stitches are very uncomfortable and you may worry about infection. Your hormones may still be in a state of flux, so you will feel moody and depressed. And you may not have a good method of birth control, so sex is the last thing on your mind. Some doctors recommend that new mothers refrain from sex until their first postpartum examination, usually about 6 weeks after birth. And if you don't mind me digressing a bit, I want to also make sure that you listen later on in the show when I do a little presentation called Sex Science. I'm going to be talking about hormones and their impact on our sex lives. So if you and your husband weren't warned about all of this, you're probably both totally unprepared. And if you can't talk about it, there's going to be trouble ahead, for sure. Many new fathers labor under the misconception that once the baby is born, their sex life will magically return to normal. Besides, this being completely unrealistic, it mostly puts pressure on the wife to do, as you suggest, her duty. This is no way to pursue a sex life together. Of course, new fathers can help their partner move beyond those feelings of sexual disinterest by being an involved parent and helping around the house. But there are also loads of other sex things new mothers can do that will pleasure their partners that won't involve full-on fucking. Hand jobs and blow jobs are always welcome. Reading erotica aloud to each other can be fun. Mutual masturbation also is an option. But probably the thing that will get your libido back is a lot of touching, hugging, kissing, and snuggling. These things, without the pressure to perform, will help reestablish the pair bond between you and your old man, which will inevitably lead to the long-awaited fuckfest. Good luck! Next, we hear from Shamika, female, 36, writes from Chicago. I've been dating the same guy for 2.5 years, but he won't even get close to my vagina with his tongue. He loves me to give him a BJ, and sometimes I do it for hours, making him feel real good. I just don't understand why he doesn't want to do the same for me. Shamika, your man is pussyphobic. I'm surprised you haven't run into this kind of guy before. There are loads of them out there. It's a masculine thing for some guys. They absolutely will not eat out a girl's snatch no matter what. It's not like they've tried it a couple times and just don't like it. They simply won't fucking try it because they're manly men, don't you know? Don't you just love it? I hate that kind of double standard. This is complete bullshit, and you probably know it too. Shamika, if you're blowing this dude and he's not reciprocating with some mighty fine cunt lapping, then you're the fool, not him. He's getting everything he wants, and there's no reason for him to put out for you. Men are pigs, dear. So if you're looking for more mutuality in the sex department, lay down the law. In the immortal words of Hannibal Lecter, quid pro quo, Clarice. Only don't call your man Clarice, okay? Good luck. Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail hotline telephone number you keep talking about? Why, it is 866-422-5680. Don't be shy, let it fly. Next, we have two guys with jizz questions. The first is Nick, 26, and he writes from home. How cute. Is it okay to swallow your own cum? Yeah, you betcha. It's perfectly fine. In fact, I recommend it. Especially if you want your partner to swallow your spooge. Every man should know what his own spunk tastes like. That is, if you ask me. And before you ask, no, eating your own cum will not make you queer. Eating your own spooge and loving it, that will make you gay. Just kidding. Oh, and eating your seed won't make you sick either. If the idea of ingesting your own seed disgusts you, as it does many unenlightened men out there, then don't try feeding it to anyone else. That would just indicate that you're trying to denigrate your partner with your spooge and not gift it to him or her. Good luck. Next, we hear from Martin, who's 19 and writes from London. Hi, my flatmate and I have started experimenting with each other's bodies. Recently, he asked to ejaculate into a cup and have me drink it. Apparently, it's been something he's wanted to try for years now. My question is, can I catch an STI from this? Or is it more likely that I will catch one from our experimenting with anal sex? Many thanks. Martin. You know, Martin, the last time I checked, cum was a bodily fluid. And you know that exchanging bodily fluids with someone you're not in an exclusive relationship with is not recommended, right? And the reason for that is that bodily fluids can carry STDs or STIs, whatever you want to call them, right? That being said, there's nothing wrong with the concept of ingesting another dude's nut. You just gotta know where that nut's been before you swallow. As to the ass-fucking part of your question, the same advisory stands. Avoid exchanging bodily fluids with anyone you are not in an exclusive relationship with. You were gonna wear a condom in your experimentation, right? I thought so. Good luck. Next up is Glenn, 56, writes from San Antonio, Texas. Dr. Dick, I am 55 years old, soon to be 56, diabetic, and I had a penile prosthesis put in for ED. The problem is that they put one in that is too short. I need to know, is there just one size of these implants? And can I have the surgery redone? There are more than one kind and one size of penile implants, my friend. If your physician put in the wrong kind or wrong size, he is at fault. If you are considering getting the job redone, I strongly suggest that you see a different doctor from the one who fucked up this job in the first place. Good luck. Next is Johnny39, writes from Waterloo, Iowa. I have been wearing a cock ring for almost 3 months, and I have noticed that my penis has grown almost 2 inches. Can you tell me if this is possible? I don't see how it's possible, Johnny. But I do see how wearing a cock ring for an extended period of time could cause serious problems for you and your Johnson. I recommend that men not wear a cock ring for longer than 30 minutes at a given time. If you are doing more than this, you're going to damage the goods, darling. And come on, I wasn't born yesterday. There is no way that you can permanently grow your dick by 2 inches by using a cock ring, or by any other means for that matter. I know that some guys out there are pumping their dicks to excess, turning their unit into a hideous mess, but that's not the same thing as growing your dick bigger, if you ask me. Good luck. So, in honor of the auspicious nature of this, my 200th podcast, I would like to start a new segment called Sex Science. Today, I'd like to talk about the yin and yang of desire, dopamine, prolactin, and testosterone. Let's talk about love, lust, and desire. But instead of looking at these things as social phenomena, let's look at the chemical reactions going on inside our bodies that make us feel and behave the way that we do. There are clear links between certain chemicals and our most basic drives, which explains, for example, why we feel horny at one moment and utterly disinterested in the next, or why our sex drive peaks after exercise. At the core of our sexual and affectional interests and behaviors lie two chemicals, dopamine and prolactin. In many ways, they are complementary to one another. Dopamine turns on desire and prolactin turns it off. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter. This is basically your body's pleasure and reward system. Our brains release dopamine to one degree or another when we see, read, or think about something sexy, taste something sweet, puff a cigarette, or come into skin-to-skin contact with another person. When dopamine levels are high, our libido goes into overdrive. Sometimes level can be so dramatic that a person will neglect other essential bodily functions like eating and sleeping. You know, some street drugs, meth and coke among them, can mimic the body into thinking it's dealing with dopamine. Dopamine is critical to the way our brain controls our movements. If it's not enough dopamine, we can't move or control our movements. If there's too much dopamine, we are plagued with repetitive movements like jerking, tapping, and twitching. Get this, novel situations can increase dopamine releases. For example, hooking up with someone for the very first time triggers especially high levels of dopamine. Curiously enough, these same high levels will not occur again during subsequent hookups with that same person. This is called the one-night stand phenomenon. It's why we can be so attracted to someone at first encounter, but not afterwards. However, falling in love with somebody can sustain high dopamine levels for a longer period of time. This explains why physical infatuation is at its peak in the beginning months of a relationship. Also, dopamine floods the brain when we get drunk or take certain drugs, which is why drinking alcohol can make a potential partner look very attractive. Prolactin is dopamine's foil. It causes dopamine levels to plummet, Prolactin is a hormone as opposed to a neurotransmitter like dopamine. It floods the body during orgasm, virtually shutting down the sex drive, which is nature's way of allowing us to attend to other essential bodily functions like eating and sleeping. Prolactin release in men will temporarily disable our ability to have an erection. This is called the refractory or recovery phase of our sexual response cycle. And prolactin is at least partially responsible for that happy, relaxed state we feel after we come. This is precisely the release women get while breastfeeding. In fact, the word prolactin directly indicates its role in milk production. Prolactin primes the mind for long-term attachment, a role that helps the mother bond with her suckling child as well as lovers with each other. This means that if you stick around and cuddle with your partner right after sex, you may actually start to like him or her even more. This is called the pair bonding effect. But prolactin's dopamine-reducing action has a darker side. It also cancels the tolerance you might have for your partner's flaws. While dopamine and prolactin are good indicators of immediate workings of sexual pursuit, it's testosterone that best explains long-term changes in courtship. Testosterone is responsible for the masculinization of the adolescent male body during puberty, and it increases the dopamine levels that regulate our sex drive. But testosterone leaves its fingerprint on the body as much as on the brain. It's the catalyst for the changes in skin tone, fat distribution, musculature, and demeanor, which are signals to others that this individual male is sexually mature and in good health. However, if you get a fever, become depressed, your testosterone levels can drop significantly. Malnutrition or high levels of anxiety or stress will also interfere with testosterone levels. The most immediate effect of this is the decrease in libido and a noticeable drop-off in energy levels as well as confidence in ourselves. There's no doubt about it. Testosterone levels will signal to potential mates that you are in the throes of depression, stress, anxiety, or malnutrition. You will appear a little less attractive to people subconsciously. That's why a confident, dominant male with high testosterone levels generally enjoys more mating success. Testosterone levels are highest in the morning, then wane throughout the day. It's also much higher in men in autumn and lowest in spring. However, sexual desire is still more complicated than is known to science, and there may be multiple archetypes of partners we are drawn to. There is evidence that aggressive, high testosterone men appear sexier to women and gay men for one-night stands, but softer, more sensitive, balanced men are more likely to tug at our heartstrings in relationship. Scientists reason that the bulkier mate is more likely to be physically powerful and carry good genes to create strong children, but the slimmer guy is more loving, a reliable partner, more likely to help raise the kids so they survive to adulthood. The effect of this strange contradiction seems to be a biological predisposition against monogamy and sexual exclusivity. But none of this is carved in stone. A man's hormone levels increase when he's in a competitive environment or carries out acts of aggression, which can explain how guys seem to bulk up so quickly when they go to prison or join the army or join in sports. These levels decrease when he feels intimidated or humiliated, which might explain why those who get picked on at school stay skinny and mild-mannered compared to their peers. This, in turn, makes them easier targets and only increases the likelihood of them being bullied. This is really common behavior among primate colonies that have huge alpha males looming over a population of smaller, submissive males and females. While this is not the perfect parallel to human social groupings, it does go a long way to explain how a social environment can be a precursor to physical body changes. And just so you know, our testosterone levels also drop during long-term relationships. This gives the male brain a sense of stability and mellowness, easing off on our drive to forage for new sexual partners. Science alone lacks a moral element and fails to explain in a modern context why we should desire to be masculine, aggressive, potent, or dominant in the first place. In nature, the alpha male is the most likely to enjoy reproductive success, but that's not what gives our lives value today. We might have more success being an average male that falls in love and becomes a good provider. And in the modern world, it's probably a more stable and sensitive man who is most likely to sire children. Still, science can give us important clues to what's going on in our minds and bodies, and that of our potential partners. A lot of our basic inclinations are out of our control, but when we know what causes them or what to expect, we can work with them for the best outcome. Good luck.
I object to all this sex on the television. I keep falling off.
Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is So Hard for Men. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose, or if one should just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace. So Hard for Men is different. It's made of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's much kinder to my system. There are no headaches, no unsightly flushes, no upset stomach, no rise in blood pressure or altered vision.
You always have a very smooth explanation ready, huh?
That's true. In my years-long search for the holy grail of herbal erection enhancers, I have found only one product that consistently delivers on the promises it makes, without any of the nasty side effects. So Hard for Men improves genital blood circulation, which assists in achieving and sustaining a strong erection. As you know, every human body is unique, and each of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way. So keep that in mind when you use So Hard. And just so we're clear, So Hard for Men is not miraculous. It will not override an unhealthy lifestyle, but it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused as well as more energetic lovers. Look for the So Hard banner on drdicksexadvice.com.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Let me help you with that.
And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.